Welcome to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga. I'm joined, as always, by Paul Hoynes, our Tribe beat writer. Paul, good to have you back from a seven-game road trip. The Indians went 3-4 against Toronto and Tampa Bay, and, you know, it didn't look all that great doing it.
Yeah, that's the way I put it, Joe. I thought they were out-hustled, outplayed, and out-enthused by two rebuilding teams. I mean, the Rays are still in it, obviously in a wild card, but they're 8.5 out, you know, kind of a long shot. But they both been eliminated in the AL East race. And this is a team that we've talked about this before. I don't know if they're waiting to clinch. I don't know if they're waiting for somebody to flip the switch. But it is a team that's just kind of, you know, plodding along. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of urgency to me in that clubhouse and when they take the field.
Well, a year ago today, they won their 21st consecutive game. That was a team that had a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of, you know, wake up and go to the park every day and just try to win that day. And that we don't see that in this year's club. But then again, last year's club sort of spent all of its energy winning those 22 games in a row. So maybe
that's
there's something.
Point.
Maybe there's something to it. Who knows?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I really do, you know, think that, you know, playing day in and day out with a 15 to 16 game lead, you know, if you lose a game, so what? You know, we're 14 games out. We'll get it back tomorrow. I think that really has played into this, the way this team approaches the game. I think it's kind of been a two-edged sword for them. It's hurt them and it's helped them, and it's allowed them to bring guys back, you know, rest guys like Andrew Miller, and you know, it's allowed them to make a move like Josh Donaldson, you know, kind of to upset the apple cart and move people around, because there's nobody pushing them. There's no fear that somebody's going to come from behind and catch them. Now the question is, what they got 16 games left. Can they bring this all together in time to be a much more focused a ball club going into the postseason?
Well, it's going to make those 16 final games a little bit more watchable, and, you know, maybe to a degree, you know, there's three in there against Boston, so you know, there's something to watch there. But again, those 16 games, I think 13 of them are against Central Division opponents, and it's just going to be awful-looking baseball.
It's going to be spring training baseball.
Yeah.
That's what those games were in Toronto. I mean, Toronto had to have 30 pitchers, it seemed like. Oh. I mean, they went through 6, 7, 8 relievers every game. It was, you know, you couldn't keep up. So, you know, you can talk all you want about, you know, regulating the expanded roster in September, but it would be nice to see, like, just like a, you know, each series set a limit for the 30 players you can use. I mean, if you want to bring up 40 guys, or fine, bring them up, but interchange them.
Just do active and inactive for each night. You
exactly.
know, 2 hours before the game, each manager has to turn in, you know, if you've got your entire 40-man roster up with the club, you know, say the limit is 28 for the game, and you've got to turn in 28 names of guys who are eligible for the game. You can't have the situation that they had in Philadelphia the other day when they were playing the Nationals, and you know, Philly, I think, faced five batters in an inning, and they used a different pitcher for each batter in the inning. That's ridiculous, and the games are 4 hours long already. You want to talk about skewing pace of play figures? That's what this is doing.
Yeah, I would think, you know, Francona has always petitioned for that some kind of rule change, some kind of limit on the not a limit on the 40-man roster, but the limit on, like you were saying, the active players for that night.
Right.
And I think that would make sense.
It would be
a fairer, fairer playing field too, because, you know, some teams, you know, don't bring up a lot of guys in September, and they kind of get caught short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, the NBA the NBA and the NFL both have rules like that. The NBA, you got a 15-man roster, but only 12 active for every night. So every night you've got to declare three guys inactive on your roster. So, I mean, that just makes the most sense, I think. And that gives a chance for more strategy. You know, the managers, night-to-night pitching matchups, you know, Francona can look and see who they're facing, and maybe he only wants right-handed bats on the bench, or, you know, something crazy like that. But,
yeah,
you know, it's – I don't know. There's something that can be changed about that. All right, let's just briefly in this G-Man Choi, the nightmare for the Indians down in Tampa, and we saw the sort of a detente in the Francona Kevin Cash prank war, I guess, really anything else from the trip that stands out?
I was trying to think. Cash said he was going to take Uber to the ballpark because he was afraid Francona mm-hmm. was going to do something to his truck. And Francona said, I'm trying to act like an adult, a mature adult, and I hope he does too. So I don't know if anything went on behind the scenes, but it was a lot more silent, you know, a lot calmer waters in St. Petersburg than it had been in Cleveland.
Well, until Cash got thrown out of a game.
Yeah, he was protesting a balk, and you know, he didn't see it right away. It's one of those real quick ejections, but he was tossed. Yeah,
and Tito had to love that. All right, one other thing that came up during the as soon as Josh Donaldson was activated on Tuesday, we saw some reaction, and there was a story by Ken Rosenthal that was put out there that rival teams, rival contending playoff teams, particularly those in Boston and New York, were upset that the Josh Donaldson trade was allowed to go through and allowed to happen. Houston also in on that, and Houston had gotten assurances from the league, and they were satisfied with what the league said. But mainly Boston and New York, which just sounds so ironic to me, that Boston and New York would be the teams whining about an MVP caliber player coming to a contending team for the stretch run, when this is something that these two teams do regularly. You look at Giancarlo Stanton joining the Yankees from Miami for pennies on the dollar, or you know, in exchange in that trade. What do you make of the whole situation, and how does this come off as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, you know, Chris Antonetti was in, at Tropicana Field for the just completed series with the Rays. So, I talked to him a lot. And the way he explained it, they did, you know, MLB approved everything they did. Even, you know, people, the teams were supposedly mad that, Donaldson came off the DL. You know, he was put on revocable waivers. And supposedly when you've done that, you're healthy. Then as soon as the Indians made the trade for him, they put him back on the DL. But, to Antonetti said, MLB approved that. They had talked to Donaldson and his agents before the deal and said, you know, we don't want to bring you right back. We want to work out a plan for you. And that was the deal. So, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the teams were upset about. And I think, you know, it might have been that, you know, teams like the Yankees maybe had their nose out of joint because this is the second year that the Indians have beat them to a player. They beat them to Jay Bruce last year, a free agent in you know, when they made the August deal for Jay Bruce, he came over and really helped them. And now they beat him to Donaldson. And, if those teams weren't interested in Donaldson, you know, why are they upset? And if they were, and if they it seems like they could have claimed him on waivers and blocked him mm-hmm. from getting to the Indians because the Indians didn't claim him. So they waited and worked out a deal. So I think I wrote a headline on my story when I wrote it. It said Antonetti says the Indians are innocent of all wrongdoing in the Josh Donaldson trade. And Antonetti came up to me the next day. He goes, I never admitted we did anything wrong. You know, so I don't know. I should have written the headline different, I guess. But well, you know, we just made a trade.
Well, to me, it seems almost like posturing by the Yankees in particular, because they're struggling a little bit right now, but and the timing of it. It seems like posturing to me because, like you said, they had a chance to claim him. He went through waivers. He cleared waivers. So they had a chance to take him, but there's that $4 million price tag on him if you claim it. Now, the Indians worked out compensation where the Blue Jays were going to pay, $2.7 million of that remaining right. $4 million on the contract. But that wouldn't have been the case for the Yankees. If he had gotten claimed by the Yankees, the Blue Jays would have stuck them with the whole $4 million. So really what it comes down to is the Yankees coming out and saying, well, we're upset about this deal when, the other side of it is if we would have paid the $4 million, we could have had him. Right. They're doing that for their fans to make it look like, or, anybody who follows them to make it look like, well, we got swindled on this because there's collusion by the league and letting the Indians get away with this. But, all they had to do was pay the $4 million and they would have had Donaldson if they wanted him.
Right. And it was the same thing with Jay Bruce last year. The Yankees didn't want to assume the $3+ million left on Bruce's contract, and the Indians did. They thought they made him a better offer. They made the Mets a better offer with the prospects they offered him, but they didn't want to pick up what remained on his contract. So maybe money.
You mean Ryder Ryan wasn't right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think maybe the fact that the player to be named going back to Toronto is Julian Merriweather, a guy that prospect from the Indians that underwent Tommy John surgery in spring training and hasn't pitched all year. I don't know if that upset people, but it just seemed it was mostly sour grapes to me.
Yeah, and you call it whatever you want, sour grapes, posturing or sort of making themselves look better to their fans. But this is, you're talking about a Yankees team right now that's only one game up for the top spot in the wild card at the moment. They've really struggled since Aaron Judge went on the DL.
And they had like an 8-game lead in the wild card or some crazy lead, a big lead over the A's.
They could win 100 games and still have to go on the road for a 1-game playoff. That's how ridiculous this is right now. All right, let's move on. We've talked a little bit about Josh. We got our first look on Tuesday at what the Indians playoff roster could look like, what the Indians playoff lineup could look like against at least a right-handed pitcher. When Terry Francona put Josh Donaldson in the number five hole, he dropped Yonder Alonso down to sixth. So you've got Encarnacion and Donaldson batting back-to-back, 4 and 5, which, two right-handed bats, kind of a head-scratcher. But, it looks like that's what Tito might stick with if that's his A lineup, is what he put out there on Tuesday.
Yeah, that was, that was an interesting lineup. All nine guys, all nine position players, former All-Stars, at least they've been to at least one All-Star game. Let's see. What'd you say? Lindor, Brantley, Ramirez. That doesn't change. The top three guys didn't change. Then Encarnacion, Donaldson, Alonso, the middle three, and the bottom three were Cabrera, Kipnis, and Gomes. So, mm-hmm. I think you face those two right-handed hitters. I don't know if that's how Encarnacion and Donaldson hit in Toronto or not.
When in 2016, for the majority of the season, I think 119 games maybe, it was Donaldson in the two hole, it was 93 games. Donaldson in the two hole and Encarnacion in the three hole. Because Bautista was having an up and down year and they were moving him all over the place. But that 2-3 combo was Donaldson in front of Encarnacion. I don't see that happening here.
No,
he's not.
They're not going to take Brantley out of that number two.
They're not going to take Ramirez out of three hole.
They could. Maybe they should for a couple days at least, because Jose is struggling, man. At least you get maybe this home run he hit yesterday to break up the no hitter by Snell will get him going. But he needs something to get going because it's approaching a month now.
Maybe coming home for nine straight games here might do something for him.
Yeah, he just – he looks – he not only looks tired, he looks kind of like not mentally fried. He looks like he's mad at himself to me. I mean, when he went 30-30 in Toronto, the reporters went up to talk to him, and he was like, what? What do you want to talk to me about? That's what the impression he gave you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went 0-4, and then he stole a base. Okay, so he talked about that, but he was not pleased with himself, I don't think. I think he's just kind of fighting himself.
Right. Well, now. You talk about that George Jefferson strut and that walk that he sort of has. It's hard to sometimes figure out whether he's doing that to sort of, you know, be like feeling himself, or if he's genuinely, you know, pissed off and walking around and, you know, angry about what's going on. Tito seems to think, and he keeps saying it over and over again, that Jose is right there. He knows what he's doing when he gets in the box. He knows what's going on. The results right now aren't coming through. Whereas early and middle part of the season, they were. Now he's sort of, you know, looking kind of foolish on some of these breaking balls.
Yeah, I think so. I think, I asked Ramirez that, you know, is it what the pitchers are doing to you, or is it what you're not doing? And he said, it's all about me. You know, the pitchers haven't changed. The pitches haven't changed. I'm just not executing right now. And, you know, it happens. I'm going to be all right. You know, he's got a lot of, you know, most of these guys, they really, truly believe in themselves. You know, they look like they have some self, you know, like everybody, they have some self-doubt. You know, they have some of those moments. But these guys got a pretty, pretty good base of self-confidence. I think, to me, more than anything, Ramirez looks tired to me. I think you can see that on defense a little bit. I think now he's got to move over to second base. And, you know, everybody I've talked to, you know, in and out of the organization think this is going to be a good thing because they think he's a better second baseman than a third baseman.
Right.
But I'm just wondering if this is the last thing he needs at this time of the year when he's struggling, been struggling for a month, and all of a sudden you're changing positions. Because, you know, there's a couple – he just – you know, from what I remember him last year at second base, or when he – you know – and I got it. You know, he's played one game there, two games there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to give him a break here and give him a chance. But, so we'll see. But I just saw some signs the last two games that it just – he didn't look as comfortable as I thought he'd look.
Well, and you remember last year when he moved over to second base, that was way earlier in the season.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Kipnis was on the DL. The change with Kipnis going to the outfield last year happened at, you know, the last 10 games of the season. Because Kipnis had just come back from the disabled list. I mean, it's not like Ramirez hadn't been playing. Now Ramirez is only playing, you know, 18 games at second base through the end of the season. It's a little bit different than last year. But I tend to agree with the assessment that he's the best option defensively at second base. But you know, who knows. If he comes out and he booted a couple of balls this year at third base that were sort of uncharacteristic, ones that you sort of looked at and said, wow, he that's a ball he would normally, you know,
yeah,
make a play on. So, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe there are tired legs.
And I don't know if he's completely healthy, Joe. I think, you know, we've seen him in the trainer. You know, he's been nursing kind of some quad thing from early in the season. And I don't know if that's still bothering him. But we'll see. We'll see. I think he's going to hit. I think he'll come back. I think he'll hit fine. What happened last year with the Yankees, I think that taught him some stuff in the postseason I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he'll be ready by the time the ALDS comes around.
He's still running the bases like a madman. So
yeah.
I guess that's not an issue. One last thing I want to talk about, Andrew Miller. You talked about somebody coming back and looking healthy. Andrew Miller, wow, the last two outings, he has looked really good. And all this talk about, you know, when we get Andrew Miller back, he's going to be the Andrew Miller of 2016. Can that happen? The last two outings for him in Tampa Bay, One in Toronto, one in Tampa Bay?
No, two in Tampa Bay.
Two in Tampa. He's just looked lights out. His breaking pitches are looking sharp and crisp. His fastball has life. Doesn't look like he has a dead arm. You know, is that what you're seeing from Andrew?
Yeah, I think so. A couple scouts told me the same thing, that he really looked good. You know, that he looked like the old Andrew Miller. And he pitched Monday, had Wednesday off or Tuesday off, and pitched again yesterday. And the scout said it looked like he wanted to get in Tuesday's game too. And I you know, just from talking to him, you know, he just seemed like a different kind of guy, whatever happened, you know, that shot kind of hit the spot, you know, the right spot.
He saw God. Like Tito said, back before the All-Star break, when Kluber got the shot in the knee, some guys see God. Well, Andrew Miller must have seen God.
Yeah. And so he said it hit the right spot, and he's never felt better. He was ready to go right then. He could have pitched in Toronto. I think they were just being careful with him. But now, you know, the key is, just like Donaldson, how much time do you need to be in peak form for the postseason? And
I think,
you know, that's the key.
The Tampa Bay Rays would say he doesn't need much time at all.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, obviously, you know, Andrew only has to come in. You know, he's not pitching two innings. He's not pitching three innings. He's going to pitch one inning and get out of there. So the process will probably take longer with Donaldson, I would think.
All right. Well, you run them out there every time they see G-Man Choi. That should be the official rule for Andrew Miller. All right, Hoynsie, we've got 9 straight at home starting Friday, and then they wrap it up with Kansas City. Or I'm sorry, I believe Chicago and Kansas City.
Well, we got 9 straight: Detroit, Chicago, and Boston at home. And then Chicago, KC on the road, the last road trip.
And then October awaits, and we will have more conversations about what the roster and the rotation and everything will look like in future podcasts. But looking forward to it. We will talk to you again next week.
All right, Joe. Take care, buddy.